You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Phil, you have some news here. There's something to do at the book fair.
A big, big book fair in Toronto, and there's a really going to be one interesting table we're going to feature on it. This is the Toronto Book Fair. Go to torontobookfair.ca. It'll be at the Metro Toronto Convention Centre, the North Building, so that's on Front Street West. Just west of Union Station, and that's Thursday evening, November 13th through Sunday, November 16th. Now, when you go to the Metro Toronto Convention Center North Building for the Inspire Toronto International Book Fair, booth 108 will be under the sponsorship of a different book list, the University of West Indies Press, Baraka Books, Friends of the Cuban Five, and a different publisher. So that'll be a very interesting collection there. So some of those titles, we read out some of the titles that they'll have at booth number 108?
Yes. By the way, did you say Baraka 2?
I did.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Okay. So from UWI Press, Dying to Better Themselves, West Indians in the Buildings of the Panama Canal by Olive Sr., Britain's Black Debt by Hilary Beckles. From Baraka Books, Justice Belied, The Unbalanced Scale of International Criminal Justice, edited by Sebastian Chartrand and John Philpott. Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa by Robin Philpott. Friends of the Cuban Five, you'll have What Lies Across the Water, The Real Story of the Cuban Five by Stephen Kimber, who we just heard interviewed. Human Development, Lessons from the Cuban Revolution by Henry Veltmeyer. And from a different publisher, we'll have Rhymes to Reeducation, a hip-hop curriculum resource guide for educators, a project of the Hip-Hop Writers Collective, and also Mathieu de Costa, First to Arrive by Ita Sadu. So that is, again, the Inspire.
I think that's Ida.
Ida? I call Ita. Okay. Ida. Ida Sadu.
We're sorry, Ida.
All right. Ida.
Phil doesn't know how to pronounce
names. No, I can't pronounce anything. I'm from New York. I have an excuse.
Well, let's try Bumgarner. Can you do that one?
I can. I even know the original pronunciation.
Yes.
Yeah. The Inspire Toronto International Book Fair. November 13th to 16th starts on Thursday evening at the Metro Toronto Convention Center.
Very good. By the way, I mean, San Francisco has a place called Book... No, we have Book City. I started saying...
Right, we have Book City.
We have Book City.
They have City Lights.
City Lights, yeah. Yes. We are... Canada should be... Toronto should be proud. We have these book fairs. There's several events. There's Word on the Street.
Right.
And we do have... I want to say about Stephen Kimber's book again. This... he is in Halifax, and Stephen Kimber is a professor of journalism there. I think he brings something to the table, as it were, because American authors are frankly quite intimidated, and because American publishers are not the bravest people in the world, and many of them, of course, are actually rather unsavory. But Stephen, was able, as a Canadian, to kind of bring a perspective, a less paranoid one. After all, Canada has had relations with Cuba all this time that the U.S. was terrified and frightened and standing on a stool and screaming for someone to come and save it from this terrible thing, which was too small but for anybody to notice. But Cuba, and we had a prime minister who, Pierre Trudeau, who died, and at his funeral... He was, of course, one of the most remarkable Canadian leaders. There's no question about that, since John A. Macdonald, who wasn't terribly remarkable. Maybe Pierre is more remarkable. And I remember that I turned on the TV, and they were showing all the dignitaries, and, of course, there were the speeches. And the camera panned around without comment at the dignitaries. And one of them was Fidel Castro. And I thought... Whoa, that's interesting. I bet, you know, the State Department, they're all, Fidel is in, I think the funeral was held in Montreal.
Yeah, in Montreal. It was Montreal. In Montreal, yes. And Fidel was there. And
Pierre was, it was, but no speeches, no interview. Mm-hmm. I like that because, frankly, from a theater point of view, that actually gives it greater gravitas. Yeah. I mean, people notice. They say, you know what's not going to be said today? it was really quite interesting. And so is this book. Phil Conlon is here, and incidentally, Phil has a program each Wednesday at 6, Classical Underground. I got that right.
You do? Classical Underground.
Sometimes I don't trust my memory. I say something and I say to myself, wow,
no,
I wonder
if I
got
that
right.
You said that right. Wednesday at 6.
Wednesday at 6.
This week, for the next couple of weeks, we're going to hear a lot of Scandinavian music. There's a big, it's kind of a mini Scandinavian festival, the Toronto Symphony, so we're going to shadow it on our program.
Yeah. I want to be sure I mentioned it. We have this issue now, and we're just speaking about this question of security, states, how they protect themselves. And to my mind, there needs to be close attention to this recent episode. Tragically, two Canadian soldiers were killed in different circumstances. And the Canadian government immediately said that it was these were acts of terror. And others, including, by the way, the leader of the opposition, Mr. Mulcair, said he's not sure that's the right word. And others said, well, like the Toronto Star, trying to split the difference and also try to support, Trudeau's son, that said, well, it doesn't really matter. Which, yes, it does matter. It matters terribly because we're talking about foreign policy. We're not talking about only domestic policy. And there's been no demonstration of any link between these individuals and this and the terrible things that are taking place in Syria, where a terrorist organization of hideous reputation, long-standing, not brand new, but a long-standing acts of terror committed in the countries of Iraq, but also Syria, where not only white Europeans had their heads cut off by these characters, but for years previous, Syrians and Iraqis have lost their lives because of their religions. By the way, it's not a question of Islam, because most of the victims have been Muslims. But the ISIS game is to pretend that they represent Islam. It's only a pretense. They're actually mercenaries, in my opinion. They're only mercenaries. They kill mainly because they are, in fact, the real deal, the terrorist. A terrorist, his propaganda is the terror itself. He's saying to the state, you see, to the people, your leader cannot protect you. I'm going to do these terrible things to you, and no one can save you. That's been the message. Now, the government of Syria called for others who say they are opposed to terrorism, like the government of Washington, which has made we've been living with their war against terror now for all these years. But they won't make common cause with other states, legally constituted UN members, who say we have a terror problem. Instead, the only person who has a terror problem, the only ones, is Washington. And, of course, you can join their coalition if you like, and then you can pretend it's all about you, too. But it has to do with the kind of the Walmart approach to business. It has to be a monopoly. They own that subject. Nobody else can talk about it. China has terrorist attacks in their country. Russia has terrorist attacks in their country. Venezuela has terrorist attacks. And very often, these people are linked to people who have very good friends in Washington. And so these governments have said, we accept that, Washington, you were the victim of a terror attack. By the way, we would note that most of those people who carried out that attack come from a country called Saudi Arabia, which is a monarchy. And the country belongs to a family. It's named after the family. They themselves behead people. That's what they do. They behead when they feel like it. And they often behead foreigners, by the way. You know, if they bring people from countries who desperately need work. They work as maids, they work as gardener, whatever. They do all kinds of labor in Saudi Arabia, servant labor. And occasionally, the state accuses them of things like witchcraft, sorcery, etc., and chops off their heads. Now, Washington has never complained, ever, about that. They don't care. That's fine by them. So those men, the bulk of them who organized the attack in New York, 9/11, were from Saudi Arabia. And Syria and Iraq and others point this out. And they say, you know, we need to make a common cause against such people. nobody answers on the other line because, see, it's a monopoly game. They wish to monopolize this. It's bringing us back to this matter of what happened here. That's why we have to be very cautious and very critical, people who want to invoke that word, because, as Ken Stone pointed out and as Mr. Kimber pointed out, once you invoke it, you start removing people's rights to defend themselves. You also reserve to yourself the right to accuse and try and convict and sentence people without due appropriate process, no due process, actually. But now, and going to the matter of the two individuals who carried out these acts, which were a type of murder for sure, what I notice that they have in common is that their parents had cried out to their fellow Canadians, to all authorities, can you help me with my son? Their parent, the father, in one case, said, I don't know what's happened to him. His friends, he's alienated his friends. He seems to be in a world of his own. He's on the computer all the time in strange internet sites, etc. And he's not well. And he needs help. Now, well, of course, this is not a government that's terribly interested in such people. All such services, all such things are not available. Less and less available, as we know, because, you know, the great cult of cutbacks and whatnot. And so such people, by the way, are dangerous to others and dangerous to themselves. And it's nobody's fault, that's why we need a lot of professional care, and we need people who can find help by, you know, a simple phone call or whatnot. In the case of the man who was whose home was original home was in Quebec, and he'd been living in Vancouver, he was so desperate for help that he deliberately committed a crime and said to the judge, please put me in jail. Please put me in jail so that I can get well. He had a drug problem, and he had serious mental issues, and he knew it. He wasn't hiding. He said, I want help. But the judge said no. And then he took a sharpened stick and tried to rob a McDonald's. That's what he did. And he eventually, well, anyway, he was homeless. He was living in a homeless shelter. And I'm listening to someone who says he's with the RCMP and he wears medals on his chest and he looks nice in his suit. And he says, well, you know, we found out he'd hid a knife. Are you kidding me? He'd hidden a knife at his aunt's house? And that's a proof of what? You know, if you live in a homeless shelter, it's a dangerous place. People, if you've ever known anybody, by the way, we had a lawyer on this show, I think it was Peter Rosenthal, who one night went into a homeless shelter. He had to kind of break in to get there. Whoa, that was scary. I had a friend who was a policeman who told me one time, the most dangerous person that he has to deal with in his usual shift is someone who is homeless, who or might be have a drinking problem, because he said, when you find them asleep and you disturb them, you might find a broken bottle in your face, because they're frightened of being molested by somebody, and that just goes with the territory. So the presence of a knife has got the RCMP thinking the guy's a terrorist. I'm sorry, I think if you go to every household, I don't want to tip them off to this, but I think every household in this city has a knife. So you're in for a lot of work. If you're looking for knives, you're going to get a little tired before tomorrow. The gun he used was not exactly advanced. This is terrible. Terrible what he did. It's terrible that it all unfolded. But, you know, we need homeless shelters that are safe for people. And we need so that means you have to put money in those things. And one of the wonderful things that a homeless shelter could properly do would help assess that they, when people are in some trouble and they're dangerous to themselves and to others, actually see that they get care. Instead, we have a system that says, no, we can't afford that. We can't, you know, these programs and whatnot have to be cut back. No clean needles, no medicine, etc. And all that is happening is you're forcing more and more desperate, dangerous people. When I say dangerous, not that they intend to be dangerous, but they just have trouble. And to hear a preaching going on about this is terrorism, I don't feel safe if a state can't make any distinction between someone of that type and an actual terrorist. That means that they don't have the capacity to protect us. They have the capacity to make propaganda, that's for sure. They know how to say, we're not going to be intimidated. Yes, a homeless man who asked to be taken in, to be put in jail, you're not going to be intimidated by him. Well, congratulations. What do you know? You're not. And so that doesn't address anything at all about the needs of this society. I'm disappointed, peeved, and we have opposition who feel afraid to point out the obvious, that terrorism does exist in the world, and it needs to be fought. If there are laws to fight it, there's no shortage of laws to fight it, if that's what you're interested in. But the other thing is, if you're going to take the subject abroad and to go to Syria, Syria is being attacked by terrorists. There's no question that ISIS is there and that they are a sectarian organization whose ideology is traceable to Saudi Arabia. It's a very narrow school of thought, if you want to call it thought, and it's well-financed. And so instead of closing their embassies, the embassies should be reopened. Cooperation and exchange of information should happen, just as we talked about Mr. Kimber's book and earlier. The Cuban authorities are against terrorism, and the U.S. authorities say they're against terrorism. Well, then sit down and make up a plan, but show a little respect for the international organizations such as the UN. Go to the UN and say, let's have a common agreement among states. By the way, if a state violates it, go ahead and take it up at the UN. That's the proper place. If you say, I entered into an agreement with this state that they would help us fight this group, and now they're not cooperating. Well, go to the appropriate quarters. But the idea of saying, we'll hunt you down anywhere, well, you can't say that because you're acting then like a pirate. States are not supposed to behave like pirates. Laws apply to states, too. So you can't say, I'll find you somewhere. No, if you think a bad guy exists in this country, then go to the country, file the papers, tell the world, I've filed these papers showing that he's harboring a criminal. That's a serious matter. Take it up. But to pretend that you now belong to a gang of pirates and you can attack anybody you feel like it, that's pathetic. That's pathetic, and Canadians shouldn't accept this kind of policy. At any rate, you've been listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. You can find us on the web, taylor-report.com. Facebook.com/The Taylor Report. And Lucas, thanks very much. And Phil, thank you. And we'll see you next week.